I love troubleshooting server issues, said no e-commerce entrepreneur ever. And that's why I'm personally migrating my stores to Shopify. Since Shopify is a hosted service, I can worry about growing my business versus troubleshooting problems, like a Magento problem I had that logged every single customer interaction and brought my site to a standstill. I wouldn't have wasted a day troubleshooting that on Shopify. And compared to other hosted carts, Shopify has the largest ecosystem of developers and apps and the best architected design framework. Officially retire as a system admin, Shopify.com. Welcome to the E-Commerce Fuel Podcast, your headquarters for building a six-figure plus e-commerce business. I'm your host, e-commerce entrepreneur, and Jeff Bezos wannabe, Andrew Ederian. Hey guys, it's Andrew here, and welcome to the E-Commerce Fuel Podcast. Thank you so much for tuning in today. Today on the program, we're going to be talking about people and managing people. Specifically, we're going to be diving into five problems that come up when you're working with people in your organization or your business and what to do about them. And joining me to tackle this thorny issue is Mr. Drew Snocky. Drew, this one's pretty heavy. Are you ready for this?
I'm ready for this.
You ready?
These five issues, are they ones you came up with?
They are.
Okay.
Yeah. They're real world, have caused me sleepless nights, painful issues that, yeah.
Got it. I didn't know if you were seeing them in the forums.
No. These are real world issues. So, okay. So it's heavy. So no first sales shout out today. We got a lot to cover. So we're going to go ahead and dive right in. Managing people is hard. I'd say it's the hardest part of e-commerce. You know, I always kind of liken it to a tightrope analogy between you're walking this fine line between being a pushover on one side and an ineffective leader and somebody who really doesn't stick to what they say and being someone who's a taskmaster, who's unreasonable, who never gives any leeway for, you know, when it's appropriate. I think it's the hardest part of e-commerce. Do you agree, Drew?
I agree. Yes. Hardest part of business, I think.
Yeah.
But it also has the potential to be the most rewarding.
Yeah. And you said that, I'm glad that you said that because we were talking about this off before we started recording and you said that. And I kind of maybe came at this because people, I've got a fantastic team and I couldn't do what I do without my team. But I think I was coming at this from a completely problematic perspective, but you're right. Thinking through this in the lens of, if you do these things right and you can solve these, you can build a really cohesive team that is very empowering.
Yeah, I see the picture on your website of you meeting your virtual team for the first time. Where was that?
What picture was this?
You guys were all having dinner somewhere.
Having dinner somewhere? I don't know. I don't remember what
Thailand
picture.
Thailand or something?
Oh, no. This was, I think you're thinking of an e-commerce fuel meetup at a conference. Are you just?
All right, forget that then. I know I've seen a picture of you in your team somewhere. Maybe I'm confusing it with a photo of you and your meetup. But
oh man! Well, if anyone,
it looked like you're having a good time, and I assumed it was with your team.
If anyone finds this mystical picture of the team and our VAs in the Philippines who I've yet to meet, I would love to see it. So shoot it over.
So your team is all there in Montana?
No, we've got some in Montana, some in Maine. Laura's out in Maine. Pat's here in Montana with me, and then we have a couple of consistent team members in the Philippines as well. So
got it.
And I think it's a good little transition. I am all of these things. I'm by no means perfect at these. And so if my team is listening, I'm sure they're going to listen and say, ha, what kind of double talk is he spewing here? And so I just want to say, you know, I do try my best. I'm by no means perfect at these, but they are definitely goals I aspire to. That being said, let's dive into issue problem number one, and that's the mindset vortex problem. And that's going to be, you know, your initial state that you have as an entrepreneur is you think that everyone cares as much about your business as you do. But when you really think about it, you put yourself in your employee's shoes, your team member's shoes. When I was an employee, I wanted to start my own business. But as an employer, I turn around and expect all my employees to be completely consumed with how to make the business succeed. But it doesn't work like that, right? You got to put yourself in their shoes, and you really need to align your incentives as a business owner with theirs. So I think it's really important. How do you do that? Well, I think the most, the best way to do this is ask them, like, what's most important to them? Like, the one of the questions I ask everybody who comes on is, what's most important to you? And I try to review that fairly regularly, at least annually. Is it time? Is it flexibility? Is it earning top dollar? What's most important to you? And how do you structure an incentive plan for them or just a job that really fits into their needs?
I agree. I think one of the biggest stumbling points for me when I started my business was I expected everybody to act like owners of the business, and nobody else was an owner of the business. So I would have meetings where we talked about our mission and we talked about what we were trying to accomplish and how to change the world. And then I would just be consistently let down when the employees didn't act, didn't own that stuff, and didn't treat the business like I was treating the business, you know, when they treated it just like a job. And I think the answer isn't always to just give everybody equity. You know, certainly that's the answer for some employees because, you know, you want them to behave like owners, so make them an owner. But for me, it was talking to my employees and realizing that, you know, hey, like the minimum wage employee who's just helping me in an entry-level job really doesn't care if we change the world. Like they just want to, you know, make a few bucks to help them pay for grad school. And so like it was sort of wrong for me to think that this person is going to help me create like a world-changing company, you know, and really I can help this person and sort of buy their loyalty by giving them like a great job at a fair wage and, you know, just treating them with respect and throwing a company party every once in a while. So I think like that was a big realization to me, and it certainly helped us move faster once I stopped treating everybody in the entire company like an owner. So yeah, I agree.
Yes. And I think sometimes too, you can, cause sometimes, I mean, money may be not be the number one motivator for some people, but it's always a motivator, right? Otherwise you wouldn't be working at a job. So I think you can sometimes get around, I've used the term like synthetic equity before. I think you can set up compensation structures, whether they're compensation based or commission based or based on certain metrics that allow you to reward employees based on performance in certain key areas without having to go through the mess of divvying up equity, which I think gets messy sometimes.
So. Sure.
Problem number two, the miscommunication problem. And this is, you know, despite repeatedly telling your team members about things that you want them to do, tasks constantly fall through the cracks and or they don't get owned by people. And I think this is probably one of the biggest, you know, biggest hangups people have managing people. Drew, how do you deal with this?
Well, I think it's a clearly written job description that lays out responsibilities and sort of the sort of intent behind the responsibilities so that you want to hold people responsible for that intent, right? Like sitting down with your employees and going over what's expected of them, but also kind of like the logic behind that expectation. Because I think if you don't get to that deeper meaning, you'll never get somebody who will go a little bit above and beyond, or people who will act on things that fall, you know, outside of their immediate job description, like a new situation that comes up. Stephen Covey writes a lot about this in his leadership books. He calls it a win-win performance agreement. So I would just recommend that every business have something, some sort of job description that they go over with their employees.
Yeah, that was the number one thing I had on my list is too. If you can't write it down and really tangibly look at, a lot of times I think this is the fault of not the team member or the employee, it's the fault of us as owners, right? Because we're not clear with what we expect. We don't get really granular with those. Like a good job description should be one written, like you mentioned, of course, but it needs to be really granular. Like here are the very specific things that I expect. And I think it needs to deal with both the responsibilities in the role, but also the ways in which you expect the employee to interact with you and with your work, you know, like how you want them to communicate with you. If you have a problem with that and you haven't talked to them, your team member about that and written that down, then that's probably your fault that it's not happening, not theirs. So, and I think reviewing this regularly, I think it's easy to, I'm guilty as charged here, to write a job description and they come on, you know, somebody comes on board and they have it and then you don't look at it for 2 years or you don't keep it up to date. I think reviewing that regularly with your employee or your team member is really important as well to make sure that, you know, it's not something that just collects dust in the corner, which causes problems.
Yeah, I think when I hear a lot of this stuff, as an owner, you think, okay, that's another thing I got to do is job descriptions for everybody. One thing I found to be helpful is to ask the employees to come up with their own job descriptions. Or you know, if you don't have these when you hired somebody, you know, if you're already in a company now where you've got employees and you never really built job descriptions, spend a day or an afternoon, you know, ask everybody to write up their own job description, put it in a wiki, and, you know, you can review it and use that as a point of departure where you review job descriptions with your employees. And I think it's a good way to get it done where it does, you know, a lot of owners out there will take it on their own shoulders. Like, okay, I have to write the job description for every employee. But the fact of the matter is you're not going to build a big company that way. Like, I think putting more responsibility on your people and asking them for input here is a good thing.
Yeah. And another thing you can do too is with that job description, you can use that to create an evaluation, really a sheet that you can give to people to say, when we have our reviews in the future, but here's our job description. Based on this job description, here are the 12, 14, 20, however many areas that I will be, you know, evaluating you on. And so giving that sheet to them ahead of time so that when you sit down and you go through and you rate them on all those things, there's no confusion about that. Hey, yes, this was something that we were tracking from the very beginning. So
right.
Problem number three, the deadline problem. Why aren't people getting things done on time? And Drew, we talked about managing people being the hardest part of business. I think deadlines for me has been one of those things that has been one of the hardest things of managing people is trying to figure out, like, you know, how do you approach that? So I've got some thoughts on you know, on my experience with that, but what are your thoughts? And this is kind of an abstract, kind of vague question, but in, you know, on deadlines in general, do you think they cause more problems than they're worth? Let me start by saying that.
No, I think they're a good thing. I mean, I'm always trying to come up with deadlines for myself. I think it's like a good forcing function to get you to produce something. And it's not always like I like a little bit of pressure with the deadlines, because oftentimes, more often than not, I find that people spend too much time trying to produce something that is above the standard that we need to get things done. You know, if you just want a quick take on someone else's marketing strategy, or a quick take on a strategy to enter a new market or something like that, then you really don't want that employee to spend, you know, too much time, weeks doing something that you really could just use like a quick take, literally. So I think a deadline in that case, like a short deadline, is useful to prevent the employee from going overboard.
Yeah, and I see it, but I guess on the flip side, I have had issues where I tend to be, and it depends on what you're doing, right? Like if you're doing something that's just internal, it doesn't need to be super nice and clean. Yeah, deadlines are probably pretty helpful. For more external facing stuff though, like in my business, for writing blog posts or getting, you know, new products up online or marketing initiatives, like usually you want to make sure that they definitely meet a high degree of quality, of course. And I guess the problem for me is being in a small business, you've got team members that end up wearing a lot of hats, and there's a lot of issues that pop up from time to time. And so being able to set deadlines, but be able to set deadlines that are reasonable and that you understand what people are doing, the scope of what they're doing. Because I think there's a lot of times you'll set a deadline and you'll either, one, realize, wow, I totally underestimated how long this would take. And so I either can have an employee rush to finish it, but do a subpar job, you know, or you, that's the problem. That's the, you know, the issue that pops up. And I feel like that happens a lot of times, and you forget what your employees are doing. I think it's easy to have, especially with small teams, again, have your team members and you forget all the stuff that they're doing. And then you realize, oh yeah, I wanted this due on Friday, but I forgot that they were doing A, B, C, D, E, and F when I, you know, just thought they were doing A.
Right. Right. I think just as was the problem with miscommunication problem, In this case, I also like having employees come up with their own deadlines.
Yes.
I think it's a good first step. If they come up with for example, if you ask them to come up with a report or, you know, publish a blog post, if they come up with a deadline that is, you know, 5 weeks from now and you think it should be done tomorrow, then just, you know, just having that communication and that discussion is constructive. Like, wait a minute, why is this going to take you so long? Or I was perceiving of this as like a quick, you bang this out task. So why are you saying, you know, 5 months or 5 weeks? So coming up with their own deadlines. And then what I found to be helpful was just keeping that on a piece of paper or in a project management system. And then during our regular staff meetings, the employee's job was to report back on their deadlines and whether they were on track or not. So, as you know, I really tried to get the team to sort of manage itself by pushing those kind of responsibilities, reporting responsibilities back on the team. It worked pretty well.
Very cool. A couple other just kind of random notes on deadlines. I think understanding that people won't be as fast as you are at something, I think it's, as an owner, you learn something and then you offload it to somebody else, especially if you're handing something off. People just aren't going to be as quick as you out of the gates. I think empowering your team members to come to you with hard options, to be able to say, hey, I know you want this done on Friday. I can get it done on Friday, but I'm going to have to axe this other project. Which one is more important to you? Making sure that you communicate with team members. Yeah, you can do this. I want you to do this. Because a lot of times what you're working on, making sure that your priorities and our priorities as a team are in the same place. And if you don't have that discussion sometimes team members work on things that really aren't that important.
Right.
Yeah. So I think it's, you know, and one thing is consider removing deadlines altogether. I'm not sold that this is a complete, this is a great answer for all situations, but I've been toying with it, or at least kind of practicing that with my team a little bit this last 3 to 6 months. And it's, you have to really kind of trust that your team members are really getting stuff done and putting a lot of time and effort in, that they're not lollygagging. But if you do, that's, at least on my end, in some ways, it's reduced a lot of stress. So it can, maybe we're not getting as much done, but it's helped me be a less stressed manager, yeah, which is nice. Problem number 4, the criticism cycle. You forget to tell your employees when they do things really well. So all they hear from you, the only times they hear from you, is when they mess up. And so soon they stop putting in hard work into anything because it never gets noticed. You know, I think, Drew, it's so, I don't know about you, but man, I think it's so easy to, it's much easier to remember the things that anyone, team members or anyone in our lives, do poorly as opposed to the things that they do well.
Yeah, this hits home because I think I fall into this trap with my son too, or just, you know, just people in my life, you know, my brother who I work with, and you're always more critical than you are sort of, I don't know, positive in their life. And so I think for me, it's been about building systems to increase the level of positive feedback that I give. Just little things like, you know, every week for each employee, I want to say something nice about, you know, what they do, and designate a day for that. Like, those are the kind of systems I needed personally to be a better manager.
Yeah, I think it's just kind of tied into the human spirit, kind of the same kind of thing where somebody else makes a mistake, it's, they're being incompetent. But if you make a mistake, you know, it's not that big of a deal. we tend to just naturally do that, I think. And the funny thing is, I think positive feedback, it's so important. Like, it's, a lot of times I think we think that constructive feedback is what really helps team members. And it does. You have to have that to help them to grow. But to really keep someone motivated and excited to be working with you, it's almost impossible to understate how far positive feedback goes. And so I don't do this. One thing I want to do though this next year is actually put it on a calendar, like you mentioned, Drew, like have at least, you know, a regular time, at least once, you know, once a month, if not once a week, where you're chatting with people and telling them the things that they did really, really well that week. One thing I do is I have a document for my team members. And anytime they do something really well, and to be fair, anytime they do something that I think we need to talk about, I always have that. I always jot that down. It's you know, right on my computer. And so, cause a lot of times you'll especially forget the things they do well. So don't forget to write those things down. And so I think if you write those down as they come to you, it's much easier to stay on top of giving them good feedback and encouragement. So, number 5, the calmly driving off a cliff problem. Drew, I don't know if this applies to you. It applies to me a little bit. You hate confrontation, so you never bring up any problems that you have with team members. So the business doesn't operate well and potentially runs into the ground while you pull your hair out in suppressed frustration because you're not enough of a man to deal with problems as they come up, or a woman, whatever the case may be. So, Drew, I mean, not you, man. You love confrontation, right?
I hate it. I hate confrontation. I avoid it.
Was this a big problem when you were running Design Public and today
huge.
As well?
Huge problem. But fortunately, I had a business partner who was much more comfortable with it. And I don't, I think in many ways I didn't have to deal with my conflict avoiding nature because I had my business partner, Sina. So he would be the guy who would not always fire people, but certainly deliver bad news. He was a lot more comfortable with that. And if you're conflict averse at work, you're probably conflict averse at home. And so for me, it's been, you know, realizing that I have that in me and trying to deal with it at home that has helped me sort of bring it out a little bit.
And how do you deal with that today? I mean, kind of in your consulting business and dealing with clients and things, is it just something where you just kind of, are you pretty good? Are you getting better at when those things happen to actually have those hard discussions, or do you tend to push them off? I think everyone tends to push them off to some degree.
I think I've gotten a lot better because I had the awareness to know that I have that tendency. So in my discussions with my wife or with people at work, I'm just a lot more aware now that I avoid conflict and I try to sort of take my ego out of the equation, step back and think about, you know, what's best here for, what's the best, most professional thing I can do here in my relationship with this other person. And I'm a lot more comfortable with conflict because of it.
Yeah, it's tough. One thing I've found is if there's an ongoing systematic problem with a team member, I think one thing that can be really appreciated from their perspective is instead of just coming out and maybe addressing it right up front, asking like how they're doing, being like, hey, you know, I've really noticed X, Y, Z over the last extended period. Are you okay? Like, is there something going on in your life or at home? Like, how are things? This needs to be authentic to work, right? If you never care about your employees and this is the first time this happens, they're probably going to see through it. Right. But to the extent you're authentic about it, I think people really appreciate the fact that you care about them first and foremost before you dive into the actual performance issue. So of course you have to get there, but I think prefacing that is helpful. I think it goes so far as like being kind and being firm, you know, there's a good balance there, right? Like one of the things that I always try to aspire to is to be kind, but never weak. And that's a hard balance to strike, but don't be accusatory, you know, try to find out what's happening. And if you can, like a written job description and expectations you've previously discussed helps out so much here because you can kind of gently point back to that and say, hey, this isn't happening. Was there a miscommunication? Are you having other problems that are preventing you from doing that? That helps a ton. And then I think finally, right. If you do this, if you schedule this on an ongoing basis, like this year we did performance reviews every 3 months, which I think was a little too often. I think next year we're going to do every 6 months, but having a regular recurring time where you can sit down and it's an excuse to bring things up so you don't have to schedule these awkward meetings, you know, on an ad hoc basis is a great way to stay on top of this.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Yeah. So that's it. Those are the five problems I had. One resource I wanted to throw out there that has probably been the best book I've read so far on managing people. Dave Ramsey's traditionally, you know, known for kind of financial advice and personal finances, but he wrote a great book called Entree Leadership, which was, I took a ton of notes and thoughts from my management style and the ways that the kind of the things that I've been incorporating, and that's been super helpful. So Drew, any resources or books that really stand out for you in terms of helping people, helping an entrepreneur manage their team?
I'm thinking two that really helped me were, one was called Top Grading, and I'm looking up the author.
Top Grading?
Top Grading by Bradford Smart.
Okay.
Yeah, so Top Grading is all about how to hire great people, and it's how to conduct your interviews, how to identify what somebody is best at and put them in a position where they're going to succeed. So that kind of, I think I realized early on that, you know, half the battle is just hiring the right person initially. And then the other half is managing well. And for that, I like a book called The Game of Work by Charles Kunrat. And The Game of Work will help you as a manager set up systems to hold your people accountable. So mutually agreed upon systems between you and your employees for performance. And yeah, I like both those books.
Very cool. And we'll link up to all three of those in the show notes for this episode. So, man, Drew, so when are you going to have that rough discussion? I mean, that I heard news for the grapevine. You're going to be canning me from the podcast here. And are we going to have that discussion anytime soon? You've been pushing that off?
Maybe next year. Just some time. Just deal with you until then.
Maybe next year. Well, great. Yeah. Well, Drew, good as always weighing in to everyone who's listening. Hope this was helpful and hope it gives you at least a few strategies for managing the team. And at the end of the day, the stuff is hard. Like we talked about at the top, you know, it's anything that's worth doing is tough, and growing a team and growing a business is hard. But like you mentioned, Drew, it's worthwhile. What do you think, just real kind of quickly in closing, maybe we should focus more on this. What do you see the real big benefits of managing well-being? I mean, apart from a, you know, a thriving business, of course, any other, you know, you said it was really rewarding at the top, and I agree with that, but what did you mean by that?
Well, part of it is just emotionally. When I think back to the 8 or 9 years when I ran my business, I don't remember days when we got $100,000 in revenue or whatever. I don't remember like our big revenue days. I remember the time with the team. Like I remember, you know, going to a trade show with the team, or, you know, some of the parties we had as a group, and just life around the office. So I think a lot of the most rewarding times at my business were times that I could share with the other people there. I remember giving out bonuses. That was a huge, huge, you know, made me feel really good as a leader. So I think I just got a lot out of the people there and the team. And I know it's a struggle to manage, but I think when you look back on it, your team is, you get a lot of satisfaction out of that team. So that's one. And then number two, I think just in terms of performance, there's really more work than any one person can handle at a typical startup. And one of the only ways you can, you know, handle all the work is by attracting people to your company who can kind of can do that work and sort of in often cases do it better than you can do it. And you come together and you get synergies and a little bit of magic, and it's just you can accomplish way more than you could accomplish by yourself. So those are two of the big benefits of a team, I think.
Nice. Yeah, I'd say from my side, it's cool seeing people grow over time as they're in your organization, in their business. One thing that I do too with team members is track their personal goals and their business goals. So we'll sit down and every year write both of those. And I think seeing the personal goals are important too, because it gives you a sense of, one, not only what's important to the person, but how well they're doing in their personal life, which is, you know, maybe they don't share all of their personal goals. Actually, hopefully not, but it's interesting to see. And so sitting down a year later, you're obviously not always going to hit every single goal. And a lot of years you don't even hit any, but those years you do, you could see other people hit those goals and those milestones is really, really cool, especially if you've hopefully had a hand in help making that happen.
So, right. Right.
Yeah. Drew. Well, thanks. It's been a pleasure as always. And here's the happy, happy leading.
You too.
Talk to you soon.
Talk to you soon.
That's going to do it for this week. But if you're interested in launching your own e-commerce store, download my free 55-page ebook on niche selection and getting started. And if you're a bit more experienced, look into the E-Commerce Fuel private forum. It's a vetted community for store owners with at least 4,000 in monthly sales or industry professionals with at least a year or more experience in the e-commerce space. You can learn more about both the ebook and the form at ecommercefuel.com. Thanks so much for listening, and I'm looking forward to seeing you again next Friday.